This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
A South African judge sentenced sprinter Oscar Pistorius to 6 years for the murder of his girlfriend, a sentence that has provoked outrage and may trigger another appeal from the prosecution.
That's VOA's Anita Powell reporting from Johannesburg. Details next.
Also, a rights group says migrants and asylum seekers in Libya are at risk of violent abuse. Cameroon says Boko Haram fighters attacked a command post on its northern border with Nigeria. And severe malnutrition strikes children in a camp for displaced people near the Nigerian town of Maiduguri.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, a South African judge sentences sprinter Oscar Pistorius to 6 years for the murder of his girlfriend, a sentence that has provoked outrage and may trigger another appeal from the prosecution. VOA's Anita Powell has followed this case from the beginning and has the latest from Johannesburg.
6 years for murder falls far short of the 15-year minimum recommended under South African law. But the law gives judges discretion in sentencing, and it's clear that Judge Tokozile Masipa exercised hers in handing down Oscar Pistorius' fate on Wednesday.
In the result, the sentence that I impose on the accused for the murder, dolus eventualis, of the deceased, that is Reeva Steenkamp, is 6 years imprisonment.
That's just 1 year longer than the 5-year sentence she originally gave him for his original conviction of culpable homicide, which is equivalent to the crime of manslaughter in the United States. That 2014 conviction was overturned last year by an appeals court. Pistorius had been granted parole and been released after serving a year in prison. It is unclear how much of the 6 years Pistorius will actually serve now. He was taken directly to his jail cell after the sentencing. Ever the deliberate jurist, Masipa explained her reasoning in a lengthy written opinion Wednesday morning. South Africa does not hold jury trials. The athlete, who made history for being the first double amputee to compete in the Olympics in 2012, is a fallen hero who has lost his career, she said. She said his request to do community service instead of jail time was a noble gesture. And she said a long jail sentence would not serve the interests of justice. No sentence she delivered, she said, would satisfy the South African public. She was right about that. The internet erupted with outrage over the news. Most of the South African public have been braying for blood since Pistorius was arrested for killing Steenkamp in 2013 at his Pretoria home. But Pistorius's brother Carl joined the fray on the other side, tweeting Wednesday, "The record has been set straight and justice done. The truth will always prevail." And in person, the spokeswoman for the ruling African National Congress's Women's League described the sentence as an insult to women. The League has been a constant presence at the trial and has called for harsh punishment for Pistorius. The big question now, is it over? Pistorius's defense team said they do not intend to appeal. The prosecution did not immediately say whether they planned to appeal. The entire affair has been a heady mix of sports, celebrity, and death. It has also been an eye-opening experience for the South African public, and, because it was the first South African trial to be broadcast live, an educational one. But at its core, this is a story of a young woman killed in her prime. Reeva Steenkamp was killed on Valentine's Day when her boyfriend shot 4 times through a locked bathroom door, killing her. Pistorius says he mistook her for an intruder. She was a model, a law graduate, and an aspiring reality TV star. And she was the youngest child in her family. Her father testified last month that he thinks about her constantly, even now, 3 years after her death. She would be 33. Her parents did not speak to journalists as they shuffled out of court Wednesday. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Hundreds of Kenyan lawyers converged on downtown Nairobi today to protest the killing of their colleague, human rights attorney Willie Kimani, and one of his clients and a taxi driver. This was the second protest in Nairobi this week against alleged extrajudicial killings by Kenyan police. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig covered the protest and has this report.
Traffic came to a standstill in parts of downtown Nairobi as hundreds of Kenyan lawyers wearing purple ribbons marched to the Supreme Court and then to the office of the Inspector General of Police. The attorneys were protesting the alleged extrajudicial killings of Willie Kimani, his client Josephat Mwenda, and their taxi driver Joseph Marori, whose bodies were found in a river about 70 kilometers from Nairobi last week. Charles Kanjama is an advocate of Kenya's High Court and chairman of the Nairobi branch of the Law Society of Kenya, the group that organized the march.
So we want to raise awareness that this is a no-go area. You cannot attack lawyers. If you attack lawyers, you're attacking all the citizens, you're attacking the country. It means you're saying that no one is safe.
The three men disappeared following a court appearance on June 23rd, in which Kimani was defending Mwenda against what they say were trumped-up police charges following an April 2015 traffic stop. Police apparently shot Mwenda in the arm by accident during the stop. The incident escalated into a series of additional encounters with police. The same day, the attorney, his client, and their driver were allegedly taken to an administration police compound. Their bodies were found just over a week later. The three men were beaten and strangled before they were killed, according to an autopsy report. Outrage has been spreading in Nairobi as more information comes to light about the case. Human rights activists held a protest in Nairobi on Monday, and on Wednesday, a mob set fire to the police compound where the men were believed to have been taken. D.K. Githingi is a Nairobi-based attorney who participated in the lawyers' march.
We are, in a manner of speaking, the high priests of constitutionalism, the rule of law, and basically the justice system. And we do not want to degenerate to a situation where you will need to be looking behind your shoulders before you can represent a client.
His colleague, Faye Shirakuli, agrees with that sentiment.
You cannot silence people because you have that power. Because now the police have been given so much power that nobody will be seeking justice. If anything were to happen, then people will be afraid. I can't go to court. I can't do this because anything can happen to my life. You can't have that fear that you're being threatened every now and then.
Three police officers have so far been arrested in the case, and another is in custody. Kenya's Attorney General and the Inspector General of Police have told the public that they will bring those responsible to justice. Attempts to reach the police spokesman for additional comment were unsuccessful. The Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights released a statement condemning the killing of the three men. It called on the Kenyan authorities to strengthen efforts toward accountability, as well as take urgent measures to prevent extrajudicial executions and police brutality and other serious violations. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu arrived in the Rwandan capital today. He placed a wreath at the memorial dedicated to victims of the 1994 genocide. The memorial marks a mass grave honoring the more than 800,000 victims. Mr. Netanyahu meets Rwandan President Paul Kagame today. He's already visited Uganda and Kenya and will be going to Ethiopia this evening. The Israeli Prime Minister is seeking African support in the UN, where Palestine achieved non-member observer status in 2012.
A rights group says migrants and asylum seekers in Libya are at risk of violent abuse, and it warns that European Union efforts to curb migration are making matters worse. Human Rights Watch accuses government officials, militias, and criminal groups in Libya of abuses, including torture, rape, and killings. Libyan Coast Guard vessels have intercepted many smuggler boats and returned migrants to shore, where they are detained. The group says many are abused while in detention. Human Rights Watch says the EU, and soon possibly with help from NATO, is deputizing Libyan forces to seal Europe's border. EU and NATO vessels currently are not permitted to sail in Libyan waters. Migrants rescued in international waters of the Mediterranean are usually brought to Italy. About 4,500 migrants and refugees were rescued yesterday in the Strait of Sicily in 35 separate operations.
Recently, the Italian Navy has raised a ship that sank last year with hundreds of migrants on board. The ship is now at the Sicilian port of Augusta, where experts have the grim task of trying to identify the remains of the victims. Most are believed to be sub-Saharan Africans, and many are women and children. Reporter Antonella Sferraza is following the story. From Palermo, she spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua.
The Italian Navy recovered the ship that sank with over 800 people on board on April 2015 in one of the worst known tragedies of the Mediterranean migrant crisis. The Navy launched this complicated recovery operation this past spring. Navy divers over the previous months had already recovered some 169 bodies found near the breakage located 85 miles off Libyan coast. The effort, as we know, was repeatedly interrupted because of the adverse season weather and technical difficulties. So the Navy used specially designed robotic apparatus to raise the boat that now is kept in a refrigerated structure in Augusta on the eastern coast of Sicily, where forensic experts are trying to identify the victims. Cristina Cattaneo, the head of the team of the pathologists tasked with identifying the corpses, say that they are expected to find between 400 and 600 bodies inside the vessel.
So Antonella, if they have the remains of hundreds of people, did they say how they were going to try to identify them?
Yes, they say that the only way to identify them is the DNA test. DNA samples will be entered into a European database where families may be able to confirm that their loved ones drowned. If the bodies are not claimed, they will be buried in Italy. Firefighters are given the grim task of extracting the bodies from the vessel's hull, and their reports are very dramatic. They are talking about an horror story. The team leader of the firefighter, Inspector Paolo Quattropani, says that there are many bodies twisted together in a shapeless mass, and that they could identify some women only by the stockings they were wearing. And many, many, many little bodies, skeletons. It's even difficult to count them. A dramatic operation that is having a big emotional impact on the team of firefighters. They are helping each other to face the terrible scenes. And there is also a psychological support service for them. At the same time, they know that these victims deserve a proper burial and that their families have the right to know what happened to their loved ones. And they know that the worst is yet to come. So far, they have not entered the hold in which they expect to find hundreds of bodies. At the moment, 505 mortuary bags have been taken out from the boat. In many cases, a single bag contains rests of an unknown number of deaths. And in fact, they don't want to show any picture because they say it's really terrible, terrible.
That's reporter Antonella Sferraza from Palermo, Sicily. She spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 20 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. A South African judge sentenced sprinter Oscar Pistorius to 6 years for the murder of his girlfriend. And a rights group says migrants and asylum seekers in Libya are at risk of violent abuse. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Cameroon says Boko Haram fighters attacked a command post on its northern border with Nigeria. The attack followed a series of targeted military operations in the area that the government says destroyed at least 10 bomb-making laboratories. Moki Edwin Kenzika reports from Yaounde.
Cameroon government spokesman Issa Chiruma Bakari says more than 100 suspected Boko Haram fighters attacked the Homika border village command post of the multinational joint task force Monday. He told VOA the insurgents ransacked several villages after they were pushed back by the military. He said one soldier was wounded.
L'attaque contre les postes de Homeka vient de rappeler que si l'ennemi est aujourd'hui agonisant,
he says the attack on the command post is an indication that even though the enemy is in agony, it is still capable of incessantly creating trouble. He says he wants to inform them that the military will continue to defend the country's territorial integrity. Cameroon is one of five countries contributing to the multinational joint task force. Cameroon sent more soldiers to the far northern border area last week after two suicide bombings in the town of Limani killed 13 people. Chiruma says troops have since raided 8 villages on both sides of the border, killing and arresting large numbers of militants and freeing captives. He says at least 10 laboratories for the manufacture of explosive devices were destroyed.
Les opérations dont le nom de baptême est arrow, c'est-à-dire flèche, ont porté.
He says some fighters have managed to escape. He says they believe the ongoing Nigerian and Cameroonian offensive called Aru has pushed Boko Haram toward Nigeria's northern border with Niger. Landmines and suicide bombings have been a top challenge in northern Cameroon. Cameroon sealed troubled spots along its border with Nigeria and prohibited gatherings outside mosques during Ramadan to try to mitigate the threat. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaounde.
The medical aid group Doctors Without Borders recently gained access to a displaced person camp in northeastern Nigeria. They describe the remote camp in Bama, near the Cameroon border, as a catastrophic humanitarian emergency in the making. The group, also known as MSF, says 160 of 800 children they tested suffer from severe acute malnutrition, the deadliest form of the condition. There is a critical shortage of food for more than 24,000 Nigerians in the camp. More than 15,000 of its residents are children, and about one-third of them are under 5 years of age. Once occupied by Boko Haram militants, Bama is now one of many camps where more than 2 million Nigerians have fled from attacks by the insurgents. Reporter Isaac Abrak has traveled to Maiduguri, the capital of Borno State, and interviewed state officials and some of the displaced from the Bama camp. He talked to VOA's David Arnold and began by describing the children he met.
You could see the children looking very emaciated and pale. You see the rib bones on their bodies coming out. The children were basically bones. Their heads were big heads. It shows malnourishment. Even the camp officials said that before they brought them into the camp, that it was a sorry state. They could hardly feed.
How long have they been in this camp?
They were there are just few days in the camp, but you know they were moved from a Bama camp to the Maiduguri camp. Obviously, there is no food. We spoke with the officials at the camp, and they expressed that at the time they went to get the people from Bama, that they were really, really in a very sorry state. So at that time, the Red Cross and some other organizations and the Borno State Emergency were helping to provide food.
Were you able to talk to any of those people in the camp?
No, we were not able to talk to those people in the Maiduguri camp, but we were able to speak to people who have been in the camp in Bama, who were able to move to in Maiduguri. You know, people who are fortunate to have relations already living and staying in Maiduguri. These are the people that we spoke with that gave us their own recounts of the experiences of what happened in Bama. Bama camp is about 70 kilometers from Maiduguri state, which is quite very secured. They were brought in there to Maiduguri because in Bama, there was no food. Even if there is food which the government tries to provide, it's just one meal a day. And sometimes they don't have the meals. If there isn't enough firewood to cook the food, or if there is no water to cook the food, so they will have to just go a whole day without food. We had people telling us how people were dying in camps, 16, 17, 20, 22 a day. I guess that was what warranted the government to go and move them from Bama back to Maiduguri.
I understand that Bama has a very difficult history of one time being occupied by Boko Haram.
It was a stronghold of Boko Haram when it was captured. Some people said it was the second headquarters where Boko Haram operated. It was the second caliphate. The first was Gouza.
When you talked to these people who had lived in Bama, why did they leave?
The people were very bitter. I know a man who was there who told me that they just give them rice virtually all the time. And sometimes the food is not even prepared because there is no water. And sometimes they go for a whole day without eating because there is no firewood. He recalls a lot of horrific experience, like children dying in numbers of 15, 16, 17, 20, 22 every day back there in Bama. He recalls how the emergency officers, talking about the government officers and also the local vigilante helping the government officers there, how they were siphoning the food and not giving them the food that was meant for them. They, however, commended a military man, an officer who was deployed back there, who they said helped to change a lot of things in the camp before they were evacuated back to Maiduguri.
You also had an interview with the governor of Borno State. What did he have to say?
The governor of Borno State, Alhaji Kassim Shettima, he lamented so much about the deteriorated level of the camp in Bama. He also admitted on how there have been food shortages and how people have also died in the camps. But he did say that when people describe it in 22 people dying every day, that it was an exaggeration. But he said few people die in the camp. He also said he has made efforts in trying to ensure that the people are fed very well in Bama, but that apparently they could not get sufficiently the services he was sending there, so they have to move them to Maiduguri.
That was reporter Isaac Kabraka from Abuja. He spoke to the VOA's David Arnold. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhaib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the 18-year prison sentence given to former Congolese Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba by the International Criminal Court for rape and murder in the Central African Republic. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.